Welcome to the blast with Dr. Dan. Come to the beach, coming to you from the beach, Manhattan Beach, California, MBCA. I'm Dr. Dan, ex-professor, current comedy writer and stand-up podcast host. If it's worth talking about, then I'll jump in. Often, even if it's not, it doesn't matter. We're just here to talk. My guest co-host this week, two truly great stand-ups that almost nobody knows, because that's how we. That's how we treat greatness in America. We have Bent Washburn sitting in Germany via Utah and D.C. And we have Lawrence Thomas, the Kentucky Terror, threatening the more Kentucky people from the stage. And the world's funniest bartender at OB's here in Manhattan Beach now. So welcome to these guys. And let's roll on the blast.
There you go, man.
You guys roll. Know each other, right?
Yeah.
It's first been a while.
Universal Studios, we were in an audition for something. Yeah.
It was something with Star in it. It was comedy. It was a Star. That's the first time I met J.P. Buck was at that audition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's happened with that guy? Like he made all that money off the blue collar guys and haven't heard from him since.
Exactly. I mean, that makes total sense. What people? I don't understand why people don't retire more now. Like they make 50 million and you keep going, or 10 million, and I don't understand.
Oh, it's got to be like and Jay. For people who don't know, J.P. Buck was the manager.
Foxworthy,
Ingvall, and Larry the Cable Guy, but not for Ron White. There was a
Ron White left
separation. Yeah,
there's a great story. I don't know if it's true about him being at a Christmas party and walking over and going, "You coming with me? Or are you staying with that guy?" And like,
oh, really?
Yeah, that's what I heard. That like JP said something that I don't know if it's true or not, but it's a great story.
Yeah, that was the story. There was some real hardcore animosity between Ron White and that guy, and that's why he broke off and got his own management.
Yeah, I can't imagine Ron White having any of that kind of.
He's got an edge back behind the scotchy booze. There's a little bit of edge back there.
Yeah, he's funny, man. Yeah,
he is great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, come on, Ron White.
Yeah, amazing.
So between you guys, you got like, when did you start stand-up? Like, you guys must have 60, 70 years of comedy experience here.
Oh, man, a lot. Yeah. How many did you? When? 98?
I started in 88 or 87. I can't remember.
Oh, wow. I started doing... Well, I quit for a few years. I'd say adding it all up, I've gone almost 30 years, I guess, if I add it all up. Yeah.
I started in 87, so that's what, 45 years? No, not 45 years. 35 years.
Yeah, we're pushing a century worth of comedy between us.
Yeah.
all of it not golden. Even,
not even close to, yeah, that's something
all gold. That's right. Everything we've said.
Yeah.
We are the sort of the three old white guys podcast at this moment, which I kind of appreciate in some ways. It's like, you know, if you want to go see what the white guys are doing, you know, I guess there you go.
This is it. They're old. They're old.
we look like the cast of that movie that had George Burns and what was it?
Oh, the Golden Boys or something? Or
the one that had...
Sunshine Boys?
No, the one that had Norton. They were like bank robbers, and they were in their 70s. It had... What's the guy from, from The Honeymoon? Art Carney. What was the name of it? Anyway, there you go. That's perfect.
Yeah, you're Art Carney. I think you're Art Carney. I don't know who I am.
But you don't. Going in style.
He's definitely Art Carney with the hat. Yeah.
Well, introduce yourselves. Ben, tell people who you are, where you're at, what's going on.
I am, it's Bent Washburn, B-E-N-G-T. And I am a Swedish name, but as you mentioned, I'm not from Sweden. I'm from Utah originally. And my wife is a retired Air Force officer. And now she has a job with the DOD. Department of Defense, in case anyone doesn't know what we do with 18% of our money every year. And I live in Germany. on her insurance in about and her dime a lot of times.
So you live on the DOD. The DOD's paying for you.
I live on the DOD. Well, and I do cruise ships now, and I fly back to the States to do sets and clubs, and I did a corporate show 2 weeks ago.
Is that right?
Very nice. Yeah, so I do stand up and watch kids and pick up dog poop and that kind of stuff.
Sounds like, it sounds like the trajectory you would have chosen for your career.
And my whole life, actually. It's all worked out to plan.
Are you in Hamburg? Is that where you're at?
No, I'm in Stuttgart, but equally German sounding, I think. It's
maybe
all...
Maybe more.
I think Stuttgart, depending on how you say it, I guess. I mean, you could say Stuttgart, and then it doesn't sound German, but yeah. I'm down where the Porsche and the Mercedes are made. Porsche, Mercedes, lots of rich people, a lot of supercars driving around. Yeah.
So does it
not
feel,
me.
do you, I know like in your bit where you said, which I think is a great bit about, everybody's like, oh, you learn German. Have you learned German?
No, I don't think you can learn it. I started when I was 46, and I can't even. And now I didn't learn. I can speak English, like I say, with a German accent. That is getting really good. My German accent is spot on. It's really good. I'm not kidding. I can pass for a German easily.
That's awesome.
In America. Yeah.
All right, LT, give everybody your background, your international flavor, you know, with your hat.
My international flavor. I'm like I said, the first time I walked on stage, I think it was 87 in Nashville, was making country music videos, you know, and started doing comedy there, and then eventually quit and went on the road. Speaking of Foxworthy, he's the one that told me to quit my day job. He was like, I was kind of the house MC at Zany's in Nashville. Maybe the second or third time open for Jeff. He used to come through all the time. He goes, you need to quit your day job. I go, dude, I'm making $40,000 a year. He goes, I'm making 80, Lawrence, and I quit. And I'm like, oh, okay, you trumped me up. But yeah, then I, you know, did the
you
road.
You may need to quit your day job if.
If, right, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, I knew you from Louisville. We're both from Louisville, Catholic school kids. Then I got a little bit of heat, I guess, and, you know, came out here and did a few episodes of a sitcom that got canceled. And I was on the road for, 18 years nonstop. And then I came out here and kind of came off the road when I went through a divorce. Then I came off the road completely. And right before COVID, I was going back on the road. I stopped just short of making the dream board, you know, with the pictures on glued. Well, I was going back on the road. I was going to get out of the bar business, and then Wuhan shit on that. But recently I've started doing some shows again. I hosted a music festival in Kentucky, which I really enjoyed. Done some corporate things, and I just booked my first club gig since, you know, before COVID, like 3 years before COVID. I think it's my first club gig in 6 years. So, as soon as I get my passport back, we're going to see what happens. Go to Thailand and get more of my hats.
Yeah, we're going to get Lawrence on the cruise ships. Bent got me on the cruise ships, and next we'll get Lawrence. Lawrence is the perfect act for a cruise ship because he actually likes to talk to people, like he's friendly.
Yes. You'll fit in well. Yeah.
Yeah, I was the guy that would be selling my t-shirts, and the other comics would come over and go, would you quit talking to these people? Let's go. I'm like, hey,
yeah. Yeah. And that was even, the cruise ships, people will talk to you.
I was telling Lawrence, like, you know, I just did my second one, a double trip around Hawaii. And when people get on for the first 3 days, they're just looking at you like, why is that guy alone eating, you know, near us? Like somebody actually asked me, what happened to your wife, man? I'm like, yeah, well, it's a long story. You know, she was here the first day and never could swim. But then, you know, then you do a show for two shows for 800 people each. And now you're, you know, everybody knows you. Like, you know, for the next 3 days, you're a minor celebrity. You can't get away from people. So,
yeah, you meet people. I had a lady sometimes. It's not always positive, Lawrence. I had a guy approach me at a buffet. I don't know if it was a celebrity ship. And he said, my wife loved your show. And I work really clean on a cruise ship, very clean. She just loved your show. I said, oh, this is my wife. She'd like to meet you. I said, oh, sure. And he said, okay, I'm going to the casino. And he dumped his wife on me. And she was out of her skull, crazy. First of all, since I'm doing clean comedy, that must be because I believe in Jesus like her, right out of the gate. That was the assumption. Right out of the gate, she started trashing Muslims, and then she started singing. She said, I'm a performer, I'm a Christian musician, and she started singing her original tunes to me a cappella in the buffet. And man, the side eye full of pity that I got from like 50 people, just like, that poor comic. And that husband just at the casino, and I understand, I mean, he's drinking himself. He doesn't want to be. Yeah.
I hope at one time when she was singing, you closed your eyes and you raised your hand. Just to give her a little support. You know?
I was so busy just thinking about, this is absolutely insane. Yeah, I should have. I wish I would have. That would have been good. Yeah. Of course, my Mormon upbringing, I grew up Mormon. You never do that stuff. It's all. The whole thing was extremely inappropriate. You don't.
God, yeah. It is weird being trapped with the audience after, you know, you are with the audience, because that's one of the beauties of stand-up is that you do stand-up for this audience, you have this intimate experience, and then, you know, maybe they linger a little bit, but then they're gone. You never see them again. But now they keep, you know, washing back on shore. You're like, oh, man.
You can be eating with these people every day for a while. Yeah, bumping into them on the streets in weird cities. Like, oh, hi. Sometimes they're great.
Yeah, I found they're fairly friendly, but you have to start writing lines to use off stage. Like, I got asked 3 or 4 times, hey, do you still do comedy even though you're not on, you know, stage or whatever? And I'm like, well, it's free now, so it's not going to be very good, but I'll try.
Sure. I'll bounce material off you. Or come over to this cafe. I'm going to bounce bits off you. You'll see if you enjoy this. I've done that. Have you ever done that with some? I've sat down with, it was either another performer and they kept wanting to be in on the whole process. So I started bouncing bits off him. Well, that's not funny. Yeah, it is. I know what I'm doing. Yeah. Here's the next one. Well, that's not funny. Yeah, it is. That's funny too.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
Well, that's my problem. I was never a sit down kind of writer guy. And, you know, when I was married, I always had somebody go, that's funny. You ought to do that. That's funny. You ought to do that, you know. And now I don't have anybody to sit around and tell me, "Oh, that was funny." I'm just saying shit.
You should do that. Wow. How did you get divorced? Because my wife's always like, "Are you bouncing a bit again? Is this a bit?" It's never. That's funny. You ought to use that. It's like, oh, so are you writing now? What are you?
Well, mine wasn't a colonel. Mine was a comedy club waitress. So
perfect. Perfect.
Well, exactly.
We're still stand-upping and comedy writing. It's still in the world. We're still here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm writing new jokes. I got my latest joke is about how, true story, I woke up in the chair in the living room and Kelly's just looking at me like that. She says, oh, I thought you were dead. So apparently that's the age I am. I look dead when I'm asleep now. So that's the new bit. If I don't move, very corpse-like, unless I'm moving. That's where I am.
That's funny. So, that's the first one of the first options people now go to when you're very still. Like early in life, it's not the first thing to think. Death. No, it's
yeah, like, they're right up. Oh, that's it. Kids, it's happened.
I was cleaning out from under my bed, laying on my stomach, my feet hanging out from the bottom of the bed. I'm trying to read something on their bed. Duke walks in, my roommate, and he like looks down, and I'm wearing my earphones. And he's talking to me, and I'm not moving. And he goes, "Are you dead?" or something like that. I'm like, no, I'm getting a touch on him.
Starts going through your dresser. Of course.
Well, and I was working on a bit this week when I was in Hawaii about just all the dying rock stars. I mean, when you realize you grew up with all these people, they're the same age as you, and suddenly they're just dropping around you, and you're watching mortality, you know, even at the upper levels, the upper echelons, and you're just like, oh, Prince is gone, you know, and that guy, you know, was 3 feet tall and was a sex symbol. Like, he had so much energy going on, and he's out. Like, this guy made purple sexy. Barney the dinosaur color.
He made a lot of weird things sexy, I gotta say.
He did, right?
Yeah. I wouldn't.
I want to know who's the guy that saw the Prince video and said, "I can pull off the net scarf around the lower part of my face." And if you went to a party looking like that, like, look, I'm like Prince. Get the hell out of here.
That's always fun. I like it. When people who aren't rock stars dress like one.
Yeah.
When I like it too, like, even rock stars, even these guys that are great artists, like, you get to see their failures. Like, when he tried to do the guy who used to be called Prince.
Oh, yeah. You
know?
Yeah.
It's just a spectacular artistic failure across the board. Everybody's like, I don't know what to do with that dude. What? Like, and he had to finally go, like, oh, I'm Prince.
I'm Prince again.
Well, the worst example of that is Garth Brooks, man. You remember that Chris Gaines thing he did? And he kind of wanted to be Prince. He was like country. He had like a Carol Channing bob going on the front of the album.
It
was
Garth Brooks did this?
Oh, yeah, man. Look at that. The album cover, it's called Chris Gaines, or Who is Chris Gaines? And it almost ruined his career. I think he appeared on Saturday Night Live like that.
Is it because someone told them they need to reinvent themselves? And so
with musicians, like, I had a buddy who was a great trumpet player, and he played in Black Joe Lewis and the Honey Bears.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Sean. What's his name?
You worked with him. You met him in
Austin. He's great.
He was saying, like, Black Joe Lewis had a big hit with like an R&B. I can't remember what the song was, but it was a big hit. And then just out of the blue decided he wanted to play heavy metal or some kind of metalhead stuff. And like, his label ended up dropping him. Nobody wanted to hear it. And he's like, he just got bored with the stuff that was popular.
Yeah. And then away he goes.
Yeah.
So they just, Prince got bored with his name.
Right.
I'm tired of this name. It's strange. Well,
the whole thing, if you're Garth Brooks, is, hey, you know what? Dabble in that album, but don't change your name and make it some kind of weird character. Just go, I was going to mess around. I made this weird album. You know, Bob Dylan did a whole album of covers, you know, but and everybody hated it. It's called Self-Portrait, but at least he didn't change from being Bob Dylan.
But they should. I'm waiting for one to just literally just put a different person on the album picture. And maybe lip sync for the guy. They could go on tour and he would be backstage.
I like it.
That'd be fun. I'd watch that.
Well, let's wander the news a little bit, man. There's always crazy stuff going on. We got a Mormon on, or ex-Mormon. Are you a Mormon or ex-Mormon?
Yeah, I'm not officially an ex-Mormon. I mean, they haven't kicked me out.
Is there an official like excommunication process?
Some sort of form you have to fill out and a letter you have to send in. And then they write you a letter back and it says, fine. And then that's, I haven't done all that and I don't care either. Yeah. So I'm Mormon, I guess.
You don't set off alarms if you walk into a temple?
The temple? Oh, they wouldn't let me in there. Yeah, I don't have the paperwork that I wouldn't pass. No.
You're looking a little too close to God. We got a velvet rope. You can be over there being kind of Mormon, but
yeah, you can't. No, No participate. Yeah. Is there Mormon stuff in the news?
Yeah, there was a big Mormon story the other day that they fined the Mormon church $5 million, which is nothing, for hiding a $32 billion investment fund that they have.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. They do. Which, here's the thing. When I was in college going to grad school, I remember being in an interview with my bishop, my leader, and asking him if I should pay tithing, this 10%, on my student loans. And he said, yes. Now, wow. What a prick. What a prick. So their whole thing at that point, I don't know, maybe it's just 5 or 6 billion. But to have all that excess cash and money, and then to have this guy, my mentor and leader, tell me, yeah, you need to pay 10% of your student loans. If I could go back in time with, I don't know, that guy needs to be kind of slapped. Because he was a bishop in a student ward. He had student after student. He was telling them all to pay tithing on student loans. You got to understand, it's 8% interest on the damn thing, you know? And then you're giving 10, just evil. So
now, was the tithing going straight to him?
No, it goes to the church. It goes into the big puddle of money that they're, you know, and they do some good things with that money. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, don't tell a graduate student in art to give 10% of it.
In art,
yes.
Yeah, there's a certain beauty to that callousness. It's kind of like the Catholics, you know, the great story, one of the great fundraising stories ever, of the old lady who gives her 2 talons or whatever in the Bible, even though she had so little. And the guy's like, she gave more than. I'm like, great. Now you've given the poor guilt if they don't give their 2 talons. What a great recruiting story.
We can all give something, Dan. So that's what I did. How were they hiding it? Just what were they?
They shell companied the money. And so instead of saying, hey, this is connected to us, $32 billion. So it could be taxed however they tax investment money from a church. They put it in shell companies that they tried to disassociate from. So it wouldn't, you know, show up on the IRS radar.
A Mormon shell company. What would that look like?
I don't know. Did shell company come from this? Does that term come from the shells with the ball under it?
I don't know. Good idea. Good question.
I got no jokes. I just got questions.
Well, that makes sense, though. It would be like
I don't know. It just popped out. I just thought I'd ask.
Yeah.
Sounds what are traditional shell companies? Do you guys know? How are they hiding all this money?
If you're a subsidiary, you know, it's all just legal hierarchy. If you're a subsidiary, they can run the money through there and it doesn't go into the triggerable amounts for the full company. You know, it's sort of, you have different write-offs at different levels, as I, you know, understand it in my accounting genius.
Well, if you want to know finance, Brent, you really should be talking to me, not Dan.
You have shell companies. Back when you were selling the t-shirts, you needed a shell company to cover your t-shirt sale money.
I've got a shell company. It's a moving box from Home Depot that I throw all bills and everything else in. Just never look at it. Just don't open it.
Yeah, Lawrence, you're a financial financial approach is different than most.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Yes, it is, man. I got in a little trouble, man. Let's just say. The shell company, the IRS thought I owed them $600,000. I was like, I don't think my family has made that much money since 68. I mean, you know, 1868, you know.
So. But they just send you a bill and then they just hope
during my divorce, I got a little cray-cray and I just started throwing bills into a box. Ignoring stuff. And I never filed any income tax returns for a while.
Oh, that'll get you. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, so they put you at the highest rate and, you know, they were like, I was going to Mexico and I'll go to get my passport renewed. And, the guy hands me this envelope and I go, that's a little thin. He goes, yeah, there's a letter in there for me. and I was like 600 grand. turns out I've found the most efficient, the inefficient way to save $12,000 is that the IRS, you just don't pay, you know, file your taxes for a while, and then they take all the money that you should have gotten over the years, and then when you finally start getting your things back, you got $12,000. So it's I'm an idiot is basically what I'm saying. But you know the movie A Beautiful Mind, where the numbers mix in front of Russell Crowe's face, and to me it's the opposite. They have knives and they have sharp teeth, and
it's an ugly
under the bed.
It's an ugly mind. We need to see that movie. Exactly. Ugly mind.
Just an show me mind. Sitting in a
just somebody sitting there not being able to do math.
Like, just trying to
sucking out of a straw.
Yeah, so there's a little bit of more Mormon trickery going on, but it's like, you know, it's religion. The Catholics have their massive history of crazy financial stuff. Like, even I do this joke about the, you know, fish on Friday during Lent. That's clearly, like, half of them were fishermen. That's clearly a marketing scheme.
Pushing them to fish sales.
Like, hey, fish sales are way down this quarter. Now, tell them if they're going to hell if they eat meat on Fridays. I think
Friday,
that
they
will...
got to eat fish every Friday. That's a brilliant plan.
Yeah.
They all do it.
Centuries, 2,000 years and going.
Yeah. And the TV preachers are pretty sneaky with, well, they're not even sneaky. That's the weird thing to me. It's just out right in the open, like on the television, witnesses everywhere. Just fakery.
Is the one. The one guy, Jesus wants me to have a private jet. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then thousands of people. Well, yep.
What?
No, that was in the news.
That's a scene from An Ugly Mind. Yeah. That's a scene right out of An Ugly Mind.
All the bits.
Sure. Joel Osteen pays himself $54 million a year.
Is that what he gets?
$54 million a year.
Wow, no wonder he's so positive, because he is super positive. I wondered where that light of Christ came from. It was $54 million a year. And man,
that'll
keep you happy.
Yeah.
I'd believe in the Lord if they gave me $54 million a year.
If I had $54 million, I'd quit microdosing.
If you can be depressed with $54 million, you just need to go ahead.
I'd say you could macrodose. You could macrodose with $54 million.
A lot of people do.
They certainly do. So there was the Christian, there was the church stuff. You know, we've got all the things going on still with the war. What are you guys thinking about the, got any perspective on the war? Biden was in Ukraine this week for 72 hours, sneak visit. And, you know, of course, in the, you know, the big worlds now of red versus blue politics, it doesn't matter what you do, they're going to find ways to dump on it. So it's like, well, there was a derailment in Ohio and he doesn't care about that, but he goes to Ukraine. I'm like, really? That's the false equivalency we're going to throw up there?
Why not? Sure. It is. He's pretty old to be going too.
Yeah.
And he got, I guess you would say he got his dander up. He was pretty upset. He was angry, which I don't mind. That's good. Yeah. I don't like Putin. I think he's a bad guy. It's horrible.
Yeah, is there really an argument there? Is anybody going, you know, I'd like to have him as my grandpa figure.
Do you remember all the Putin fans? Just a few. And now I still think they're there. They're just not talking, but they're still Putin. But I think,
isn't that based on some kind of other evilness in their head that they like Putin? Nobody that you know that's like a regular guy, you walk down the street and you go, hey, this guy just did this.
I don't know, man. You go look at the right. I mean, it's one of the things that they've done.
I'm saying evil, the right. I'm just saying. Unless I know people who are right.
Yeah.
That aren't that crazy far right, who would go, fuck Putin, you know.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you start listening to, you know, Hannity and shit like that over and over and over, you're going to come up with some way to, you know. And if you already have a bent to where you don't like certain types of people or whatever, then you're going to.
Yeah, it was weird. They liked him. And I remember when he first started doing this, and there was a shift. It went from 74, because they had an approval rating poll among Republicans, and Putin went from like 74 down to like 30-something percent. And my first thought was, who are those 30-something percent? My other thought was, you know, they should really, at least I think the lesson they learned is to not trust their own judgment of character so much. That's what I would hope. They think, you know, we were wrong about the P guy. Maybe we had it wrong on the T guy, but it none of it. I'm puzzled.
Well, but I think it's what people don't understand on the left, because if you're a thinker, you never just think on the surface of things. You always descend down. You look at some of the evidence. You'll compare this guy to this. You'll know what's false and what's not. But if you just stay on the surface of, hey, it's an old white guy who's been in power for a long time. He's Russian. I got that. And that's about all they know. That's about as deep as they process it. So if they want to just shift it and say, hey, you know, he's just trying to protect his country like everybody else.
By going into another country.
Of course, because they would have invaded him.
He's killing Nazis. It's so bizarre.
But again, like if you live in a world without evidence, like there's no, you don't need proof. It's just claims. So if you sever evidence from claims, then you can start to understand how they can do those things, because they just don't process what's been given to them. They just listen to the claims.
And there's no standard of evidence.
Which goes back to your whole thing about he's not helping in Palestine, Pennsylvania, or Ohio, is because they just put that. I mean, I've got a friend who just puts that, these little blurbs about how there's nobody from the federal government in Palestine, Ohio, helping out. You're like, really? Nobody? Nobody went there? Nobody's doing anything, you know? I read it on the internet, so it's got to be true.
Yeah, it's a constant just... I wouldn't go
there. I think the whole Putin thing is homoerotic. I think they all saw the shirtless horse picture and they're all like, now there's a man that I can get behind.
And I think that's kind of like what a manly man.
Yeah, look at that. I like to ride.
I like this guy. He sends out people to poison people. He's a good guy. I like this guy. Yeah, it's insane. Russia is a crazy. When the war broke out and I listened to Tucker Carlson, heard some quotes from him about Russia. And I thought, that sounds like Russian propaganda, that he's literally spewing Putin's talking points for him. It really sounded like that, but I realized I didn't know anything about Russian history, really. So I got a book on Russian history, and oh my God, what a train wreck. What a train wreck. Russian history's really depressing. It's just... not a chance. They never had a chance. Culturally.
It's just coup after coup after coup, right?
Yeah.
Like it's.
Yeah. And it goes from Ivan the Terrible to just the next terrible forever. It's never. And they went from a dictator to communism, right to a dictator. It's just my favorite story I read recently. And I'm reading a book called Gulag. This is the Stalin story. You'll like this. This is an entrapment story. This is a story of legal entrapment. What he did is he takes 6,100 people. He needs them to work up in Siberia. So he just throws them on a train, 6,100. They're going to be settlers in Siberia. Great news. So they put them on a train. They die at a rate of 30 to 40 people a day because the train's too crowded, no food. When they get to the island, it's worse. The island, there is no food, no shelter, no tools. It starts snowing the next day. They come back 3 months later. There's only 2,000 people left. So what do? They arrest them for cannibalism. They arrested them all for cannibalism. It's entrapment for cannibalism. And we know that Stalin knows because they thought it was so bad. They thought it was a rumor for years. But then they uncovered a letter detailing the entire thing to Stalin. So Stalin just sat there and read it and like, well, that's going according. That's Russian in a nutshell. Entrapment for cannibalism.
I'm feeding the poor.
Yeah, they're feeding the poor with the poor. It's true.
Spin on it. You know, spin it around a little bit. Hey, we got some guys out there in the gulag, right?
I think that sort of that next level stuff, right? Like that, like next level evil. Like everybody's corrupt, you know, Trump corrupt and you know, all this stuff.
But
this next level where there's nobody watching you can do whatever you want. It's like, you know what? I wonder if I can get people to eat people and then charge them with.
And then throw them in jail for cannibalism. Insane. Yeah, and it's just one after another. And it's next level. Stalin is next level.
Yeah, I'm not a next level guy. Like, I'm, if you make me the czar, I might be walking around with my robe open, you know, in my own place.
You might not file your taxes. Right. That's how far you'll go.
Exactly.
Your next level, I didn't file my taxes.
Yeah. What is your next level? What's the most evil you would get? That's a scary question.
Yeah.
Well, Germany got a bunch of blowback recently about trying to block tanks or, you know, aid to the Ukraine. What's up with that? Because you're not that far from Ukraine.
The Leopard tanks, aren't they Leopard? I don't know what animal. I don't know what mascot they chose for their tanks. I believe it's a leopard.
Bent, you're bouncing a little bit on your knees there with your.
Sorry. Yeah. Sorry about that. I'm trying to give everybody. I'm talking about tanks. But what happened was after the invasion of Ukraine, Germany changed their tune a lot. I mean, I think they tripled their defense budget, like almost overnight. But and then they started getting pushback on sending weapons from within their own, you know, community. But they kind of changed
pushback. Like, what are they afraid of?
Now, escalation and, you know, nuclear weapons and then they're off a lot of liberal far left in Germany, I guess you'd say, who still see America as the warmongers and the, I don't know, I guess we're still, because of the invasion of Iraq, there's some people that they're very skeptical.
Yeah, this stuff splinters so fast when you start involving all these other countries. Like, suddenly China is looming over here and they're going, well, do they really want Russia to do that well, even though they're allies? Because they don't really want anything to do with Russia. They just put up with them because, you know, they need another communist ally. So, like, how much are they going to help? All these things that just extend these kind of wars like this for years and years and years, because nobody wants either side to win.
Yeah. You're right. A lot of times there's no motivation for an end. This one, I think there is. I mean, maybe I'm overly optimistic, but I think Ukraine, after I read the Russian history, Ukraine is very different from Russia in this respect. They never had serfdom. The serfs in Russia would flee to Ukraine often to get away from nasty landowners. And when they did, this is interesting, taxes were communal. Like, they'd come in, the czar would come in, or the Khan, and he would say, okay, this town owes me, say, $1,000. Are you paying attention, Lawrence? This is a tax thing.
I was drifting off there. I was thinking of Tony Curtis and Yul Brynner and Taras Bulba. That's what I know about the Ukraine.
So he said that when they would flee to Ukraine, they take their tax money with them. They were supposed to pitch into the pot. What I'm saying is Russia's never liked Ukraine, ever. They've always hated them. They starved them to death. They when they needed workers, they take them and ship them up to islands and charge them for cannibalism. I mean, that's their that's what they do. So now I lost my track.
I think that's kind of the thing, right? Most Americans never even knew where Ukraine was. They thought Ukraine was already a part of Russia. And suddenly, you know, like they're now an entity. And the only real explanation that I've heard for why Putin had to invade was like because Ukraine was becoming viable, you know, as a law-abiding democratic state. And it's right next to Russia. And he can't have that because then everybody sees within Russia, they start to see, oh, the lies about how great Russia is are just now right in my face. Look how great Ukraine is running. And so he can't allow that to happen.
And they needed people. I have military people tell me that Russia's facing a population problem. And their system can't manage an economy. They just can't. I mean, it's managerial cancer. Their dictatorship and communism. And look at how their invasion went. I mean, my word, That's pretty, pretty bad. All the tires are flat. No one in the convoy. All the tires were flat.
Well, here's my biggest insight into Ukraine versus Russia is that Yakov Smirnov was actually from the Ukraine.
Oh, was he? I didn't know that.
But he had to act Russian because nobody knew what Ukraine was. So he just made up the Russian card.
And if he was Russian, it would have been really dark, bad, nasty humor. And then everybody dead.
Well, what sucks is the guy's trying to get back into comedy. Now, if fucking Ukraine wins this war, then Zelensky's headlining some club I want to work at now. And I'm in the back of the room going, you know what? He's really not that funny. I can't believe
I lost you.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're back.
Did everybody lose me?
No, I heard you. Zelensky's the Danny Bonaduce of, you know, politics, who's now going to come back in and headline back the clubs.
Him and the guy with the glasses from Family Ties or whatever was Skippy.
Skippy. Skippy. Yeah.
Skippy. He was around forever.
He still is around. I saw on Facebook. He's still. I was going to say, have you guys seen Zelensky, any of his sitcom that he wrote? Did you know the story of how he got into power?
No.
Do you know? He wrote an entire season of a sitcom. And that the storyline was of a guy who becomes president, who runs for president and becomes president. And during that sitcom, he laid out all the plans for it. It's brilliant. And really? I watched one of the episodes, and that guy's genius, man. He's genius. I mean, it's like if Trump actually had to write a sitcom. And act in it, not just sit there and you're fired, but like literally generate content and act in it. Yeah. That's how he won the election.
Wow. I'm going to have to check that out. So like it could have been that some of our great sitcom stars could have been our president.
Yeah. Yeah. Like Skippy, President Skippy. Only it'd be like President Seinfeld, you know, like a co-creator or President Larry David.
I would want President Larry David in that. Yeah, I would listen to that speech all day long.
That State of the Union. What a great State of the Union.
I don't know. Looks like we're doing all right.
Maybe you complain a lot. You just whine a lot.
That's awesome. Let's see what else was there. West Virginia passed a law this week to allow concealed carry on university campuses.
Good.
Yeah, what do y'all think? As an ex-professor, just more affirmation of I got out at the right time.
Yeah.
You just give more A's. I think you just give more A's. Everybody gets an A, I think.
Well, you know what? Literally, it wasn't the guns, but that's what has happened on all campuses. Like, there's so much blowback if you give students a bad grade. Because they now know how to whine and they're consumers. So they will go and actually complain to your manager. And so it's so much trouble if you give somebody a C that just give everybody a B. And then the good students, you give them, you know, an A and that's it. And those are all the grades, B's and A's.
That's it.
The last time I taught advanced television writing at Dears of Texas. And I have one student, he was just so bad. And I don't even know if he was smart or not, but he was an English, a second language transfer from India. And he wasn't ready yet to do, you know, sort of English level narrative. And it was an advanced TV writing course and he didn't get it. And I'm like, so I worked with him. He never got it. Finally, I was like, okay. And I was looking at the grade sheet and I'm like, just give him a B. Just give him a B. It's like, I should fail him. Like he was not able to do any of the assignments. So I wrote C. And I knew it. It just all blew up in my face.
Really? For saying that someone who couldn't really speak the language yet was an average screenplay. That's pretty wild.
Because that's the danger to teachers. There's so much downside to giving a lower grade and zero upside for giving lower grades. So you just give everybody B's and A's.
Now you could get shot, you know?
Yeah.
That's a good way to just you want to go out, just give everybody D's and just wait in the classroom. They show up and shoot you.
But the guy did turn out to be the governor of Punjab. So that was
good. Well, and we talked about it. I'm like, he's like, I didn't grow up with, you know, Western movies or sitcoms or any of that kind of stuff. And I'm like, yeah. And you may know, you know, the aesthetics of your culture. You know them way better than me. Like, I watched some Bollywood. That's about it. And I couldn't judge you on that. He's like, well, can I write that? And I'm like, no, I can't judge you on that. This is a Western TV writing course.
Right. Yeah.
And so, you know, he understood it, but then he also knew that he could just complain. And I got calls from deans. He just kept taking up the ladder.
My gosh. I taught for a while. I taught art. And I remember giving a few C's and getting complaints. I had one guy who came in and he didn't show up till like 3 weeks into the, he wasn't even showing up. And when he showed up, he said, well, I gave him the materials list because it's art. He said, well, do I have to get, yeah, you have to get all that stuff. So weird. And he was taking out student loans for the course. I remember that was just mind boggling. And you would give him an assignment and he'd draw whatever he want. He just usually D&D figures, didn't matter. You know, like I'd say a still life or but he'd just bring back a drawing of like a dragon. he's always putting boobs on stuff. Like it'd be like a vulture with boobs or a goblin with boobs. It was weird.
I was so done with teaching when I quit because of stuff. It was just endless. Like it's not the teaching. It's not the intellectual work. That's fun.
There's
a good percentage of the students who want to be there and they have some talent and some motivation and they work hard. But then everybody else, it's just in the way. They're just in the way of everything. And so, you know, you're like, ah.
God, this sounds like a family meeting at my house. Florence is in the way. Get rid of him. He's not doing anything. He's putting boobs on everything.
Yeah, he's in the way.
The way, man.
But you wouldn't have blamed the teacher, right? You wouldn't have been like, it's the teacher's fault that I can't, you know, that I'm drawing boobs on this dragon.
I would just leave class, man. I would give it the old income tax level. I'd just get out of there.
Just leave.
How many classes I withdrew from?
You'd get a little letter.
I went to spring break and got so drunk for a week. And then I got so sunburned that I missed 3 weeks of a class. And I went in and I lied to the professor and told him that I had been in the psych ward in Louisville and that I had checked myself into Our Lady of Peace. And he goes, okay, just come back next semester about this time. And so my buddy was in that class. He's one of my best friends. He goes, I mean, we were more than halfway through the semester. And this rugby guy comes walking in with a bandana tied around his head, a military jacket, rugby shorts, and he's dipping skull and he sits down in class. And everybody turns around and is like, what the fuck just happened? And I ended up getting an A in the class, man. It's just, I withdrew. I'm not ready for this, man. I'll get it next time. And you just got to be willing to tell a little lie.
That wasn't a little lie. That was a pretty big lie.
That's
that
a big was, lie.
That it was worked. Insane soul asylum and the whole thing.
I would get sued.
It was like, it was the perfect lie because this is going to go, well, if this guy is crazy and I doubt him, then he might go crazy on me or I might hurt his feelings.
In West Virginia, you might shoot him. You know?
Exactly.
Well, and that's what I'm talking about. Like I would constantly look at, and I was doing stand-up at the time and teaching. So I ran those careers, started both those careers at the same time. And I'd have to stop myself from being a stand-up with these people. Like, you know, I remember this girl coming in and I give her, this was when I was at University of Texas. And so they actually had standards when I was a grad student. And I gave her like a C on a paper and she's like, I really worked on this. I did like 20 hours of research and went to the library and everything else. I'm like, well, you'd be better off saying that you didn't do anything on it because it's terrible. If it was your best effort, you're not going to get any better. So what do you want?
I think we've learned something is what I'd tell her. I hope.
Yeah. Did you ever tell somebody, hey man, you know what? Auto Diesel Academy, barber school. I mean, I'm saying, if you were proactive and tell them they're stupid, give them other choices.
Well, I did.
My mom always used to go, well, the world needs ditch diggers too.
Oh, yeah. I've heard that.
Yeah.
They never said that to me because I'm very weak and lazy. But
hey, Lawrence has got a strong back. He's got a big picture out of him.
I did tell a student once who came in that I could tell instantly she's going to just complain about her grade. And she was a very horrible student. And she's like, well, it's like, I got like a D average right now. And it was late in the semester. She goes, I'm like, well, I don't fail people. I said, you'll get at least a C, you know, turning everything in. Everybody gets Bs. She's like, well, I want an A. I'm like, well, here's what you do. You go back in time, invent a time machine, go back to the beginning of the class, buy the book and read it. And actually, you know, the exams aren't hard. They're as simple as I can make them. So, and she's like, she looks at me like, I'm just joking. It's fine. You're not going to get an A.
I thought you were going to say, go back in time to where your parents meet. First, you need to figure out which one was the dumb one. And then you got to stop them from having sex.
I used to give people on my syllabus a list of other things to complain, like other causes to blame for their bad grade other than me. And one was DNA. Your parents didn't have strong enough DNA. So, you know, blame them. Blame your hormones for wanting you to go out, run around, have fun, you know, and actually enjoy your life. All these things.
But good idea. I told the whole class. I told the whole class once. They were all, I went to IU for my graduate work, which was a good school. And here I am teaching at this little school, Weber State University. And there's no way, you know, I'm like, if you're getting a B in this class, I got all A's and I'm not making it. I'm not, you're definitely not making it. Oh, you're so negative. Okay. So they always, you're so negative. Where do you leave the classroom in reality? I'm bouncing around again. Sorry.
Didn't you end up getting what's your terminal degree? Did you get a PhD?
And a master's. There's no PhD in studio art. So master's.
And tell Lawrence what studio art is.
Painting.
My father was an art professor at an art institute and a commercial artist and an illustrator, but I don't know that I've ever heard the term studio art.
Yeah, we always called it studio art, and that's fine art. Fine art painting, fine art. Printmaking, drawing. It's very snooty, I think.
Yeah.
And you can, yeah. It's a vehicle for pretension sometimes, I think.
Well, that's good.
Keeping pretension alive. 2023.
Yeah.
The art world. Well, that was another story last week, and then we'll finish up because I know Lawrence has to go. Is somebody, a visitor at museum accidentally brushed up and, you know, destroyed a Jeff Koons balloon dog.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's okay, I guess.
Right, but it's Jeff Koons, so just take the fragments, and that's now the art, right? So just
yeah, I think so. Yeah, he never. I never. That leads to a story about Koons. This is. I was there's a guy named I probably should Greg. We'll just say Greg. And he books shows down for Funny Business. Do you know Greg? Anyway, so we're after a show. We're in a bar and I'd had a couple drinks. And we were talking about art. He loves art. He's handled lots of art in a company in New York. He's held Starry Night by Van Gogh even in his own hands. But anyway.
Wow.
Yeah. So he knows art. And he brings up this isn't going to sound good. He brings up Koons. Who I don't like. I really don't. And I said very loudly, this isn't going to, I said, I hate Koons really loudly in the bar, like loud. And wow. Yeah. You could hear. Heads turned. Yeah. And then when you say the artist, no one knows what you're talking about in the bar in North Carolina.
The balloon dog guy.
The artist, the guy who does the balloon dog. He does these, he's kitschy. It's like this really, it's, I'm going to leave. It's very bad.
Yeah, that's a That's a tough. I mean, like, have you seen the Price of Everything? Have you seen that documentary?
The Price of It? No. Mm-mm.
It talks about the artificiality of the art market and how Jeff Koons became the, you know, most valuable artist in the world, or the highest priced artist in the world.
That guy's the most high priced artist in the world.
Yeah.
One of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Like, across the board, like, not that he has the most valuable single thing, like a Rembrandt or Renoir or something like that, but like just across the board sales, he makes the most money by far.
More than Thomas Kincaid? Thomas Kincaid? You're telling me he's better than Thomas Kincaid? The way the light dapples off the leaves? God damn it.
Okay. This is why I gotta say, yeah. Okay, yeah. I hate Kincaid. I will say that. I hate Kincaid. And I won't get in any trouble saying that.
Nobody's like, yeah, okay.
Actually, in that bar, I think I would have gotten more trouble saying I hate Kincaid. There have been a few fans of Kincaid in that bar that would have gone to... to blow, it would come to blows. Anyway, sorry. Yeah, Koons makes more. Yeah.
See, that's what we need, is some kind of economy of jokes. Like, when you write a great joke, it can be sold at auction, and you know somebody else owns it, but they're the only ones that can tell that joke, and it's like theirs, and it's on the wall or something. Something to elevate the value of our art.
Is there
NFT, right?
Well, the NFTs were supposed to do that kind of stuff. Like, it was so funny. Like, in the last 2 months of doing this cruise stuff, I needed two completely different 45-minute sets. And I realized, like, how much material I have scattered all over the place. So I was going back and rescued the first bit I ever wrote.
Yeah.
And refurbished it. I'm like, oh, I could use that again. And, you know, that thing is 35 years old, but I told it last week in Hawaii. I was like, oh, look at that. It still works.
And it worked. Yeah. They work. They
the Apocalypse Now Center for Child Care bit.
What is it?
The Apocalypse Now Center for Child Care. Like, daycares, everybody thinks they're learning social skills. It's how they justify putting their kids in there. It's one of the rationalizations. But they're really learning survival skills. You walk in there, it's like, you know, kids with side with chalk, and they're like watching you with their round nose scissors.
Boogers. You know. Yeah. Yeah,
first bit true. Ever.
That's a little deep for a first bit. Mine was a truck mud flap with a metal pig on it.
And that's why Lawrence is a man of the people.
Let me lose the prop, man.
My first bit is embarrassing. It was a Spider-Man bit. Does whatever a spider can. Why doesn't the web come out his butt?
Yeah.
Horrible. It's my big closer. It's just a horrible.
Makes the cartoon action figures look a little different.
Yeah. Oh, you can tag the hell out of that. I'll tell you.
Oh, yeah.
It's got some legs. That bit.
It's got some legs. It's a spider Ate joke. It's got some legs. Well, I'm going to let you guys go because I know Lawrence has lunch. Super fun getting on here and just kind of wandering through some comedy stuff, some news stuff, you know, just sort of doing what we do anyway. So,
yeah.
Appreciate it.
God bless. This was fun. I had a good time. Good to see you, man.
Good to see you, guys. Good to see you.
I get my passport back. I'm coming to see you.
Sure. Come on out. We'll get sunburned.
There you go.
Well, and go find Bent Washburn. You can find him. Just research him a little bit on the net. He's got lots of stuff. Great DVDs. Really one of the great, like, your the Bent Over in Europe, I think, is just an amazing CD. Like, just great material. And Dry Bar Comedy, you're all over there. So you got a lot of stuff online, right?
Yeah. And I'm the only BENGT Washburn in the world, I think.
Yeah, you probably are. That's pretty good. And LT, go see LT at OB's, and he will soon be at, where's the club that you're at?
Mason City Limits in Illinois, man. The 20 and the 22nd, 20 through the 22nd of April.
Cool. And
I'll be doing some sets in Louisville for a Kentucky Derby week. So
you're back.
Come see me in Louisville.
He's back.
It's like Paul Newman in The Color of Money. I'm back.
I'm back, baby. I'm looking forward to something. Life. life beyond the peak, man. There's a whole world out there that doesn't look beautiful at 5 p.m. at night, and I want to see it.
You're going to. It sounds like you're going to.
All right, well, we will circle back around.
I'm dipping my toe in the deep end, man.
Yeah.
We'll circle back around with these guys. This is the first episode of The Blast. It was a blast. Put people on blast. I you know, super fun. And Bent Washburn, Lawrence Thomas, we'll catch you guys next time.
Have a good one, man.
Bye.